Bee Therapy, conversations about bees with Patrice Newell and Danny Lloyd-Pritchard. Today, as usual, we're going to start off with a quiz. We're going to talk about one of our favourite books by Bill McKibben, a book called Oil and Honey. Some recipes, nuts and sesame and honey, a bit of discussion about cooking. But let's start, Danny, with the quiz question.
Here it is. What are the most important things to consider when positioning a beehive?
My mind goes to a vast conversation there. There's not just one thing there, is it?
No.
There's a few.
Multiple.
Okay. We'll come back to that quiz question at the end of this podcast. Now, the book we've been discussing lately is Bill McKibben's book, Oil and Honey. It's not a new book. Came out 2013, something around there. But we both love that book.
We do. I love the little byline beneath the main heading where it says, The Education of an Unlikely Activist.
I knew Bill Kibben. I was already in love with Bill McKibben, because I read his first book, The End of Nature, when I first went to the farm. And that covered, it really summed up in its title what it was about. So I already knew that he wrote in a very poetic way, that he loved nature and he thought we were killing it. So he instilled back then a drive to pay attention to detail. But then when this book came out, so this is book 10 or something, and it's called Oil and Honey, I thought, hey, what's happening here? You wanted to write a book, did you, about the oil industry? And you wanted to write one about honey, couldn't decide what to do, so I sort of put it together. I thought it's pretty unusual. But the book does cater for people who are interested in environmental things in particular, maybe interested in running a campaign themselves or how campaigns happen these days, but they're also interested in bees. So I think you get a lot out of it, even if you're not that interested in one of those particular topics. Did you focus on the honey section?
I did. I have to admit, I found the activism side of the book quite heavy and confronting. It's real. It's based on facts. It's his life. It's what he lives every day. The acid attacks on him personally, for his choices, decisions, behaviours. I found it quite uncomfortable, to be honest. But I can continue to read because he's found a balance in his life through bees, and he's found a wonderful friendship with a beekeeper named Kirk. You love Bill, I love Kirk.
Yeah, okay. I didn't think I loved Kirk. That's an interesting thing. I was already in love with Bill, though, so I guess that was the difference. Look, the thing that I think is important in the book too, even now, is Keystone XL Pipeline and big oil in the US is relevant now. When Biden just got elected, one of the first things he did on day one was knock off those contracts. So that, you know, all those people in Bill's book, in this book, would have been dancing in the streets because such a long campaign. Learning a lot about the power structures of the fossil fuel industry alone is something that's really important. When you bear in light that climate change is meant to be having a negative impact on bees, because bees obviously rely on flowers, and not everything is flowering at the same time. And I think all of us say, hey, what's happening here? You know, 3 weeks earlier, wasn't expecting that to be here, or frosts don't come, and then they flower and flower and flower. One of the things Bill said when he was with the hive with Kirk, he said, it's not really beekeeping, it's bee having. I've often reflected on that, because if you are lucky enough to be in a space where you have a hive that you can observe, you're not really keeping it. It's a wrong name, really, for what we do.
I think it's more the bees are keeping you. And actually, rather than bee having, maybe you're bee tending. You are caring for the bees, but they are free to leave.
Do you think the bees know that you're sort of looking after them? We're not really looking.
They well, are insects.
We're protecting them.
They are insects, but they are also a superorganism, and we have to respect there's so much we don't know about bees. I think they sense your presence and they sense the care.
And that is another theme in the book. If you could imagine, we do talk about bees as a superorganism. They function as a team. They support each other. And I would say that is one of the key things when I look in a hive that makes me feel happy. Mm. I think part of the reason why I've continued to be a beekeeper and why I will never be able to give it up is it is my bee therapy. You know, it is my therapy. It always makes me feel happier with the human race because I witness an action of great care in a beehive. And in the book, Oil and Honey, Bill makes these sort of connections between when a team really works well together, they are like a super organism. And that is inspiring that we can learn from other species in this way, take note from what they do.
That's what I loved about the book, and probably that's what appeals to me when I look at Kirk and his lifestyle. It's the relationship that they develop over time. Yes, Bill is being educated about bees through his friend Kirk, but Kirk is also growing as a beekeeper, as a farmer, and recognising he also needs to change his ways to live a more sustainable lifestyle if he's going to be able to keep bees. We're talking about Vermont here, a very, very cold country where this is set, and Kirk's running hundreds and hundreds of hives. So this is a small backyard operation, and Bill will go along and assist him in managing his hives throughout the seasons. And they talk about colony loss after winter, and there's almost this relief when they go to the hives for the first time and they can see that, oh, I've still got 75% of my hives alive. They made it through. And together they're celebrating this, we must be doing something right, we're getting better. Every year we're getting better and better. And it's that hope. The beekeeping creates the hope to balance out some of the less hopeful information that's coming through.
Okay, I read that part and I remember the Obama campaign was, yes, we can. That was like, yes, we can look after the bees and get them through winter. However, one of the things I did not like what Kirk did was they'd rob the hives at the end of the season and they talk quite a lot about how much honey I've got, you know, thousands of ton of honey here, blah, blah, and put a price on it. So you got a sense of how much money he was making too. But then, and then the next page, he's feeding them all this sugar to get them through winter. And I'm thinking, wow, you've just robbed all those hives and now you're feeding them all this sugar to get them through winter. And then you're having a party at the end of it when you're opening up to see maybe if you had left a bit more honey in there, you could have got, you know, a lot more. So I found those sorts of things quite interesting. I like the fact that he gave up chemicals. He realised, you know, that was bad. So he was trying to do it naturally, you know, sustainably, or, yeah, working more in nature. But taking so much honey out and feeding the sugar, wow.
I think he's still a work in progress. He'll continue to learn, as we all do as beekeepers. And having Bill and Kirk together creates that beautiful balance and relationship. I mean, Bill is obviously there benefiting from that relationship. It's a balance to his mental health. He relishes the fact that he can escape from the world into the beehive. Kirk, his lifestyle choice is more about simplicity and sustainability, and he doesn't get too caught up in things.
I'm pretty sure, too, Kirk doesn't have the internet.
No.
Yeah, he lives off-grid.
He does.
Yeah.
He does.
And that is another theme in the book about local community off-grid lifestyle. Mm.
So that's the contrast.
Yeah.
Bill's global connected. Yeah. He's on the internet constantly.
Travelling all over.
Exactly.
Being political.
Chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
But they work together.
That's true. Great book. Well, so what rating should we give this book?
I put it up there at 4.
Four out of four. Okay, 4 out of 4. It's funny. I would always sort of have 5 as a defining thing, but we have previously gone with 4. So yes, 4 out of 4 for me too. Bill McKibben, Oil and Honey, at the education of an unlikely activist, still around, still relevant, was a bestseller in its day. Now, recipes. Have you been in the kitchen much?
Oh, I have. I haven't been sleeping so well lately, Patrice. I know you haven't either. But when I've got a busy mind and I can't sleep, I don't waste those hours in the early morning. I get up and I get into my kitchen and I get productive. And it's always something to do with honey. And I love cooking with nuts and honey. So the recipes I want to share with you today are very, very simple. You do require a delicious honey, though. I think it does make a difference what honey type you use. So if you enjoy the flavour of your honey, I'd say use it in these recipes. The first one I'll talk about is just honey roasted nuts.
Okay, I have done this myself, not always with success. So let's talk about that because, okay, you start.
I'll tell you my recipe and then you can tell me where you went wrong.
Okay.
Recipe works. Okay. So you only need a small amount of honey. I use 1 tablespoon of honey to one teaspoon of butter. You can use coconut oil if you like. So 1 teaspoon of the oil to 1 tablespoon of honey. Melt it in a fry pan. Get it sizzling, bubbling away, and then put in 2 cups of mixed nuts. These are raw nuts. I like to use a combination of almonds, pecans, cashews, maybe some macadamia nuts, but 2 cups to those other ingredients, stir them to coat them and then tip them on a tray in the oven on a low heat, about 160 degrees Celsius for about 15 minutes. And you want to stir them halfway through. So you don't want to burn the nuts. You're keeping them, you're drying them out in the oven. They're slowly roasting. And then at the end of the 15 minutes, pull them out of the oven, tip them out on a tray on the bench, which has some greaseproof paper, and let them cool down and they'll go super crunchy and you can sprinkle a nice covering of sea salt.
Mm. Okay, well, I know where I fundamentally go wrong. One of the things is with cooking with honey is I find it a little bit messy to do accurate measurements because especially if the honey is a bit thick. So I often skimp on accurate measurements with honey. But the last time I did it, it was 2 cups of pecans with 1/3 of a cup of honey. Now, I did heat it all up and I did put it in the oven and it had like a glaze all over. It was delicious, but it never properly crisped up. I guess that's the thing. And that's the problem if you put too much honey in. So that's not a lot of honey to get a strong honey flavour and coating on the nuts, and I hadn't put the butter in. I have done it with butter, but the last time when I put 1/3 of a cup. Mm. So that's the take-home message for me there.
I think, don't
overdo it with the honey.
Yes, too much honey, and if you know the nature of honey, it loves moisture. It's hydroscopic. So even after you've roasted things coated in honey, it will start to absorb moisture from the air and it will lose that crunchiness. Mm. But if you have that problem with your nuts, just throw it back in the oven for another 10 minutes and it'll crispen them up again, bring back the crunch.
But we store them in an airtight glass container. Yes.
If you've got any left at the end of it.
That, of course, is the problem. And you said two cups of nuts.
Mm.
It is amazing how easy it is to eat a cup of nuts coated in honey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other take-home message. Don't do too much because you will eat too much.
Or the message is make sure you've got friends around to share it with.
That's true.
That's the nuts. Do you want me to tell you about the sesame?
Yeah,
because it's very quick. It's a similar process. So what I mix is all I need actually is sesame seeds and honey. That's it. I boil 1/3 of a cup of honey and I bring it to the boil bubbling away. It's frothy in the pot. And once it's bubbling like that, I tip in 1/2 cup of sesame seeds and I stir them constantly boiling away for 5 minutes. I've made a mistake this morning in that I couldn't wait for 5 minutes. I was worried. I was starting to get anxious. I was going to burn the honey and the sesame seeds. So I stopped about 30 seconds before the 5 minute mark. It's worked. What I had to do was tip that mixture once it's bubbled and you get to your 5 minute mark, you tip it onto some greaseproof paper on a tray just on your kitchen bench, spread it out nice and thin and leave it there and it will go hard like a toffee and you can snap it. But because I didn't cook mine quite long enough, it's turned into more of a sesame chew, not a sesame snap.
Okay.
Still delicious. It does work, but it's important to watch that time.
I agree. This is the sort of thing that you can't cook without being there. You're listening to music, having a detailed conversation. You've got to keep your eye on that pot. But the other thing that I think with the sesame and the honey is there is that aroma of the sesame when you reach that point where you know the sesame is just starting to brown and you know you don't want to go a minute, second longer because you'll get the burnt smell. And that's usually what whenever I've done it, I've tried to keep all my senses in peak position. So it's the aroma and the bubbling look and the colour. Sesame is one of those great things, huh? Great
combination. Sesame and honey. Yeah. You can't go wrong with it.
Yeah, perfect. Let's revisit our quiz question. Where should you be putting your beehives?
Would you like to have a go, Patrice?
Well, I can tell you what my number one thing is always, and that's water, access to water. They're meant to be able to go quite a distance, but I like my bees to be really close to water, and it can't be that I need to provide the water. So I have to have a dam or a river or, you know, garden tap, pond, something close.
You're talking about fresh water.
Yes, fresh water.
I think that's right. We need to be conscious of the basic needs of bees. So just like us, they need water, they need shelter, and they need food. So water, critical for the survival of a bee colony, definitely. The shelter, we provide that shelter in the form of a hive box. You need to be sure that your hive box is in good condition as well before you start placing.
I had the most amazing thing happen to a beehive. I have to interrupt here and just tell you this because it only just happened and I haven't quite got over it. But I had white ants eat the bottom board out of my hive, and they'd eaten a whole... So looking after that hive, you can't pay too much attention to the actual woodwork and the condition. So you haven't got four other entry points into the hive, et cetera, that can happen. They come unstuck a bit there. Okay. But it's not just the wood, is it, of the hive or the plastic of the hive. It's the trees handy and the shade and the wind.
Exactly. So my question to you was, did you have a look around that site before you placed your bees to check on the ant activity? Were you aware of white ant activity in some of the fallen branches or the trees nearby?
Well, I wasn't before, but of course after that happened, I did then a bigger walk around because I found white ant activity in trees, Gleditsia trees, honey locust trees that I'd planted in 1988. So I was very upset. Not only were there white ants in the beehive, but in the Gleditsia, a tree that I had planted. So I was very, very upset about that. But I've never had a white ant problem, but of course I have had ant problems where I've gone to a hive and the entire hive is black with ants. That's happened twice in my 30 years of beekeeping. And that was an amazing sight because what was a bit of an ant nest quite a long way away, they were quite happy to travel to the supply of the honey.
That's good. Your bees are always teaching you something. Lessons learned there. Check out your sites for ant activity before you place your hives. That's another thing to consider. We also have to look at, you mentioned the shade. So be aware of that hot westerly sun. Where are you going to place the beehives? Remember how hot Australian summers can get. The wax inside those colonies can melt, and we don't want the wax collapsing in the colony full of honey and drowning our bees. So try to ensure that the position you put your hive in has that lovely shade from the western sun. Think about the prevailing winds. We don't want winds blasting in the entrance of the hive. That's going to disturb the activity. That'll reduce the productivity of your hives as well, as the bees have to fight more against the wind. They'll start to consume more of their stores. So you won't have a really productive hive if you've got the prevailing winds blasting at those hives. Shade, we've mentioned shade. We also have to look at the food sources, so the timing of the food. We've talked about this before, the plants surrounding your bees. Be aware of the types of plants. Be aware of the timing of flowering, what they are providing the bees. Are they a source of nectar as well as pollen?
I always let in the veggie garden things like basil, rocket, or everything just go to full flower so that, and normally I wouldn't do that with basil, so you're going to nip it off because it's the leaf that you like to eat. But towards the end, when I'm a bit over so much basil, I let it. And then it's beautiful as a cut flower too, Basil. But that has been a great source for that, because there often is a little bit of a moment late summer going into autumn where things are not as prolific. And you know that the bees in the hive are eating their stores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. So have you got enough food around your apiary site when you put your bees in place? The bees will forage all year round in Australia. So even in winter, they will be looking for a source of nectar and pollen. If it's around, they'll find it. The other things we need to think about is biosecurity. That is a huge consideration now with the industry. They've recently developed and adopted a national biosecurity code of practice for beekeepers. So wherever you place your hives, you must be able to access it and you must be able to conduct regular inspections of your hives. So access is important. Access not just for inspections but also for harvesting of the honey. So can your vehicle get to those hives? Can you wheel your wheelbarrow up and carry those boxes of honey back to your extraction facility? Be aware of that.
Mm.
There's other things in Australia. We are known for our bushfires. How close are your beehives to bushfire-prone areas? Do you have water nearby to fight those fires if need be?
Mm.
We also have floods. We need the water, but not too close. Is that creek or is that river going to come up and completely flood your apiary? It will happen.
Well, the other thing we must mention too, are they in plain sight for thieves? That's the other thing, because I did have one of my hives stolen.
Okay.
And now I always think about that, probably after water. I think, could there be a bee-loving thief around who might come upon the hive?
So security, very important factor to consider. Other things, if you're in the suburban area, is what impact are your bees likely to have on your neighbours?
Well, good point. During a drought a few years ago, I took a couple of beehives to Paddington, and I thought that was pretty, I was very excited that I had the privilege to be able to put them in Paddington. However, there's a block of apartments next door, and even though I'd positioned the hive not to face the street light, in the building there was a light that was attracting my bees, and this caused great unhappiness with the people in the apartment block. The bees did really, really well, and I tried to put covers up and things. I ended up having to remove them because of the peripheral light. I think beekeeping in an urban area with street lighting and nightlife just being existing, as opposed to rural life where basically it's day life, not night life, is quite challenging.
Mm.
So I didn't tell my neighbours that I was going to breeze up because I just thought I'll sneak them in there, just sort of let them do their thing. I knew you were allowed to have bees there. Yeah.
Yes. Beekeeping in urban areas has special challenges, neighbours being a large one of that. You have to be conscious of the flight path of the bees, making sure those bees aren't flying straight out of their hive past the front or back door of your neighbours. That happens. Are they flying up and over the fence and into a thoroughfare of cyclists or walkers? So, yeah, the placement of the hive and their flight path. We want to make sure the aspect of the hive is as close to northeast as possible. We want the bees to get that early morning sun. It wakes them up. It invigorates them. It gets them out foraging early. They love it, and that's the direction they'll fly to start with in the day. So the aspect. We also need to think about what stresses, in particular chemical stresses, may be around the environment. Are the bees being exposed to unnecessary risks with neighbours spraying their flowers with fungicides, herbicides, pesticides on their houses?
Well, that is a problem that's just everywhere.
It's in agricultural landscapes as well, correct? So be aware of where you're placing your bees and is there that chemical activity happening nearby. Remember, these bees can forage 2 to 8 kilometres from their hive. So they will at some stage
be exposed. Okay, I've never heard 8 kilometres.
Yes.
Since when did it go to 8? We've always said 6.
They will go where the resources are. If there is nothing within that immediate, you know, 2 kilometre or less zone, they will fly to where the flow is happening, and they have been known to fly 8 kilometres to get to that nectar. So they will. They're not going to be a very productive hive because they're going to consume most of that nectar and the carbohydrates, bringing it back. But they will do it because they're desperate to maintain that colony and keep their babies going. So lots of things to think about. You, particular in your agricultural setting, livestock is a big one. Cattle, horses love to rub against things. They love the look of beehives. We should always strap our beehives nice and tight so they don't get knocked over. In America, it's the bears. There are those considerations. If it's snowing, if you're in a snow area, you may have to wrap your hives in a blanket.
I remember wrapping mine in summer, trying to, with shade and things like that to help. I put that weather attention in summer rather than winter. But I got to say, when it's been hot, like really hot like it's been, it doesn't matter whether you're in the shade of a tree, it's still hot.
You can always give your bees an umbrella.
Okay, that could be a marketing thing. Talk to you about that later, Danny. Well, look, great talking, bee buddy.
As always.
I look forward to our next chat.
Yes, see you next time.
You've been listening to Bee Therapy. Bye.